As long as there's been a postal service, there's been a postal inspection service to make sure nothing illicit gets mailed. I went to Postal Service headquarters to discuss modern postal inspection with Guy Cottrell, the chief postal inspector.
We actually trace our roots all the way back to the Benjamin Franklin times when the Postal Service started. But we've been investigating postal crimes ranging from mail theft to mail bombs for over 200 years. Mail fraud, dangerous mails, and we're also responsible for protecting our postal employees. So our mantra is protect, prevent, and enforce.
We probably get the question, are you the Postal Inspector General? That's a whole different operation.
It is, no, but I do report to the Postmaster General, Megan Brennan of the Postal Service, so I do have a direct connection to the CEO of the Postal Service, so that helps us to ensure that we're advising her on our mission, which is to protect and support the Postal Service, its employees, its infrastructure, and its customers from crimes involving the mail.
What are the big issues these days?
Well, these days, the latest and greatest things are cyber crimes. We're really trying to be ready for the future. So we've actually just started a cyber crime unit where we're building up our resources, and also the other federal law enforcement agencies as well. We're all competing for the same small talent pool of people who can help us fight the next wave of crime in the digital arena. The Postal Service is adapting to the changing world with mail shifting into the digital arena, but many frauds and schemes we've found, they may start a different way. They may start over the phone or start over the internet, but they're still targeting our postal customers by asking them potentially to mail something back to them. Some good cases we've recently worked involve fraud schemes coming out of Jamaica. We actually have a program called Jolt. So some of the ways people start, they'll start on the internet or they'll start on the phone, and they'll target our senior American population. So one of the programs we have is called JOLT, J-O-L-T, Jamaican Operations Linked to Telemarketing. It's just an acronym. The Postal Service is the rest of government. We love acronyms. You know that. So this is where folks from other countries will target our American postal customers, either via email or telephone or even original mail solicitations, and try to get them, tell them they've won a lottery or a contest, and get them to send fees in order to collect their winnings. So, you know, some of the things we've learned in what we do, that's why our mantra is protect, prevent, and enforce. Prevention is so important for us, and some of the ways we work on prevention is really to educate American consumers on what to watch out for. You know, we have the classic, if it's too good, sounds too good to be true, it probably is. But we want people to know about these schemes and scams. You should never have to send money in to collect prize winnings. That's not how sweepstakes work. But there's things called the grandparent scam, where people will call folks and pretend that, hey, your grandson or granddaughter is in jail, you need to send money, and they do this by collecting information on social media that's out there on Facebook and Instagram and others, and gather a little bit of info and then try to trick them into sending money.
Well, where does the postal inspector leave off and say the FBI take over, or even the Federal Trade Commission?
Well, we actually work in partnership. That's an excellent point. The FBI, their mission is extremely broad. They pretty much can work on everything. We definitely want to stick with crimes that have a mail nexus, where they're folks are mailing in money or sending money down to Jamaica or another country. But many times, you know, the bad guys don't have set, oh, okay, I'm going to do this crime that's only for postal inspectors, or this crime that's for the FBI. We work in partnership with them, and certainly the FTC, on gathering data on complaints and victims to try to isolate the actual offenders, the big scale offenders.
And how do you identify types of internet crime that might have a postal component? How do you know where to look, since there's a lot of email that goes, billions of messages a day?
Definitely. And that's exactly where FTC comes in, and our partnership with U.S. attorneys' offices, where they're getting information in from other government agencies as well, with victims with common fraud schemes coming together. And then we'll probably partner with the U.S. attorney's office, and you'll have us, you'll have FBI agents, you'll have FTC involved in a joint investigation. And many times there's wire fraud as well as mail fraud and other schemes that come in. So it's a joint effort. We're a small organization. You know, you asked before. We've really got 1,400 postal inspectors, about 600 uniformed officers, and about 600 support and analytical folks. So we're not big. We're small. So we have to leverage our resources with other federal agencies.
And besides internet issues, I wanted to ask you about drug issues. There was a case recently where a common carrier, I guess it was a FedEx, was cleared of wrongdoing, and by inadvertently that happened to be prescription drug deliveries. But that there's that, and then there's illegal drug altogether deliveries. And I guess it's news to me that people would mail that stuff.
Yeah, it's not news to us, but we have an entire program. We call it Prohibited Mails Narcotics, and you know, the mission of that program is to get the narcotics out of the mail stream. You know, one of the things the Postal Service that kind of makes us a little different is Postal Service we're law enforcement. We're government, but we're also a business. We provide services to the American public. So we want to combine ease of use for customers to be able to mail things, privately without anyone opening and looking inside it. Sometimes when you have a business like that, people take advantage of it and they use it to send. But it's not an ideal way to send drugs through the mail because package size is limited. You know, you can't mail a truckload of drugs. But there are folks who think that, hey, if it fits, it ships, right? So they can send items to the mail and send it around the country to aid and abet their narcotics distribution schemes.
And I wanted to turn back into history a little bit. I was really fascinated, still am, by the Unabomber case at which bombs were mailed. And it's been many years. He's been in prison now for probably a good 10 years. What are the lessons learned from that with respect to how you inspect stuff going through the mail?
Well, that's an excellent question, and I'm gonna knock a little on the table because we've been very fortunate over the last 10 years. We haven't had anyone in this country killed through a bomb coming through the mail, but it's really evolved over the last decade or 15 years. Certainly, Ted Kaczynski and the Unabomber case was a very long investigation. Many, as we said before, that was working with many different agencies, ATF and the FBI. But as the use of mail has changed and evolved, as some of our security techniques have evolved, our inspectors now, we used to train all of our folks on what to happen after a bomb exploded. Now what we're training our people on, in addition, is how to recognize potential bomb items. Hey, someone left an article in the post office, or they left something on a counter, and kind of things we're hearing about that are happening around the world. Most people don't know this, but we have hundreds of inspectors trained in suspicious powders and liquids, how to respond to that, as well as suspicious items. In the last 2 years, we've responded over 5,000 times out to our post offices on items like that. So that's kind of how we've evolved to we train our employees to recognize items that don't belong, and we've trained inspectors to respond. So I think that's been a big key to the reduction in mail bombs.
And are the letter carriers themselves kind of a last line of defense? If they see something, is there a mechanism for them to let you know?
Absolutely. That's exactly what I'm talking about. Our employees report virtually all of these thousands of incidents we go out on because we train them what to recognize in a suspicious package. You actually described it just a couple of minutes ago, you know, something that, you know, potentially, and I don't want to say, you know, publicly what exactly we're looking for, but we train them to look for items kind of how you described it, that just look unusual or kind of out of the ordinary.
And the quantities you give actually outweigh dog bites by a factor of 10.
Yes. So our folks are very aware. If you think, you know, think back to 2001 and the anthrax and 9/11 in close proximity, it really changed the way Americans thought about mail. It kind of brought that into the forefront. We created an entire dangerous mails program where we trained all of these inspectors how to respond to these powders, liquids, and suspicious items.
I wanted to get back to the issue of relations with other federal law enforcement because there have been mail-related incidents on Capitol Hill with the real or imagined anthrax mailings. We mentioned FBI, Federal Protective Service for other federal facilities outside of Congress. And so how do you, when do you engage with them? What are the rules of engagement, and how are these joint operations set up?
Actually, Capitol Police is another law enforcement agency we work closely with here in Washington. But we've established relationships with them, liaison with them. We actually have a postal inspector embedded at FBI headquarters with their WMD, Weapons of Mass Destruction Group, for that very reason, to liaison and link together for intelligence and information with things that happen in the field. One of the, you know, it's good and bad with our mobile communication and telecommunication devices. There's so much information out there. It's getting it to the right people and getting the information back. So if we have an incident in Nebraska or, you know, in Portland, Maine, we can route it through the various field offices and get it back up to us at headquarters so we can know what's going on and make decisions. So you're absolutely correct. It's critical for us to work closely with Capitol Police if there's an incident on the Hill. And you're right. You have to understand the hierarchy and the protocols of not stepping on each other's turf and territory. Why are postal inspectors interested in this? Well, because our postal employees handled that mail before it got to these other facilities. So we're looking out for our employees. We need an awareness of what's going on. If there's something harmful out there, we need to know about it so we can notify our employees and take appropriate steps and actions.
It sounds like most of the items that would come to the attention of the inspector would be individually mailed things, first-class things or package types of things, as opposed to, you know, commercial mail. And with the volumes of that type of mail dropping, has your caseload dropped?
It really hasn't. You're correct. As a matter of fact, I think it actually makes items like this stand out even more. So I'm not going to say it's easier for people to pick out, because government officials get a lot of mail. I'm sure they're getting more and more email now, members of Congress and others, but there are occasional items. Again, I'm going to knock on wood, because I don't want to, after this interview, find out we just had something over on the Hill. But it definitely makes things stand out. We've been very consistent over the last 10 years, going out several thousand times a year on powders and suspicious items. And whenever there's news of one that's happened, it usually increases calls temporarily, because there's a heightened awareness of it.
Now, the Postal Service has contracting arrangements with UPS and FedEx, and they with you, with the, you know, Sunday package delivery and so forth. How do you relate to them in terms of carrying what originated as mail, even though it might be on a different carrier?
Well, and again, I'll answer from the inspection service security angle. Once it's tendered to us, it's mail, so we treat it as mail. If it's attacked or stolen or something like that, we would certainly respond. If it's something suspicious, we would certainly respond as well. So once something's tendered to us by one of our shipping partners, then it's mail, so it comes under our jurisdiction.
And getting back to things that people might individually send, there's no mailboxes anymore, so I'm wondering how they get into the system in the first place, because if you leave it in your own mailbox and it's suspicious, then that's the origin is known. And if you take it to the post office and mail it, the origin is known, or it could be seen the minute the person drops it off. How do these things get into the system in the day when most of the corner mailboxes have disappeared?
Yeah, well, again, I think I can answer your question without releasing too many, you know, security details, but most of the collection boxes that you speak of, the blue boxes that are out there, they were never designed to take large enough packages for that could contain devices large enough to harm people. I can't speak for the changes in the number of blue boxes out there, but we do have security procedures and techniques in place to guard against exactly what you described, sort of anonymous mail being sent out, items like that. So I can't get into the details with you without sharing too many of our security procedures, but we really want to drive packages from consumers to either be picked up by carriers through our customer connect program, or so we want most of our package customers to either go to a post office retail window or use our carrier pickup program. And then it's exactly as you said, it's not anonymous, it's right, it's from your house, from your account that's coming in.
We're speaking with Guy Cottrell, Chief Postal Inspector at the Postal Service. All right, let's switch gears a minute. Talk about the technology infrastructure that you have for all of this work.
Well, we're trying to keep up with technology, but I got to tell you, I'm in my 50s, and I have a millennial child who I have to turn to many times for some help in technology. But we've gotten pretty good in the inspection service. Our communications are lightning quick, and as I shared with you before, our information sharing is phenomenal. One of the things we're really trying to work on now is data analysis, and there's so much
data. That was my next question.
Yeah, metadata and everything available. But, you know, we have to balance the privacy of our customers with the safety of our customers and our employees. So we're trying to get a handle. You know, every year the Postal Service has more and more things available to customers, you know, product tracking, things like that. More things come online every single year. So we try to work through that, but certainly with our attorneys and our counsel to make sure that we're not using too much information or violating. We never, you know, again, you need to look inside a first-class package, first-class mail, you need a search, a federal search warrant. So that stops us and other agencies. And we make sure we let other agencies know that as well. You can't just, hey, we need to look in Tom's mail. You can't do that. You need a federal search warrant, probable cause. But there's many other data pieces out there that we try to utilize to ensure that we're keeping our people, our employees, and our customers safe, but data analysis, that's the big thing.
But you operate your own data centers and programs separate from the rest of Postal?
No, we don't. We utilize the Postal Service has several customer care centers that take. So here's an example of some of the data we get, customer complaints that come in. Postal Service, we get folks who call every day, hey, where's my package? Where, you know, what happened to this? A lot of them are service issues, but, you know, the majority of the Postal Service handles those. The ones that look like they're potential theft issues or something like that, they send that data to us, and then we analyze that data to look for trends to be able to, deploy our resources appropriately based on.
I imagine, like, if there's like a cluster of locations, say, with events happening, that might give you clues as to be able to zero in on the source of something illegal.
Absolutely. And so there's a lot. It depends on the kind of information we get in from customers. And we have many ways to get information on things happening with mail. Some of it, a lot of it comes from our own customers reporting incidents to us. Others are partnerships we have with the financial industry and other law enforcement that give us complaint data as well. Not everyone knows, because we're small and not everyone knows we exist. They don't know to call the Postal Inspection Service. They may call their bank, and then the bank would let us know, hey, we're having issues in this part of the country. It probably wouldn't surprise you to know that a lot of our issues are centered in large population areas where there's more mail, there's more people. So that's where a lot of our things come in. But we take complaints from all over the country, and actually kind of in line with what you were probably going down. If we see a flurry of activity in a smaller, more rural area, it's much easier for us to hone in on where the theft issue or whatever issue is coming from.
And what about the workforce issues? How does someone become a postal inspector? What are some of your workforce and training issues you're dealing with?
You know, back in the day when I came in, we really took probably half of our postal inspectors from within the Postal Service. So it's the main requirement is a bachelor's degree. And then, you know, usually we take people with a criminal justice background, or some folks have a law enforcement background. But it's just as important to really understand who you work for, the Postal Service, and understand the Postal Service business. So we train our inspectors at our own academy right here in Maryland. And we train them in certainly laws of arrest, search and seizure, all the law enforcement things that you would expect, defensive tactics, threat management. But we also train them in the Postal Service and the business to really understand how these 200 mail statutes that we enforce, how they impact the business, how they work. So it's kind of unique, but it's also very federal law enforcement-like.
And how is retention?
Retention is actually good. We're still kind of exploring. I read all these articles about millennials and how to deal with them, and that they hate being called millennials. So, but we have seen a little bit of turnover. But I read articles that say, you know, young people today are going to work 8 jobs or over their career. I think we have to be ready for that. Certainly the IT talent that we're looking for, we can't compete. We're the government. We can't compete with Google and Facebook and the salaries that some of those folks can pay. But we still, you know, every year we open up our application portal, as we call it, and we get about 10,000 initial inquiries. We whittle that down to less than 1,000 folks, but then they have to go through a very rigorous assessment center, and then if you're selected to be hired, you go through a 90-day, a 12-week academy for us. So it really whittles down to where we're really looking for the best of the best. So far, retention is still good, but I think we need to be ready for some fluidity in the workforce. I think that's the way of the future.
And just describe some of the outreach to the public that the office does, because there's quite a bit of it.
Yeah, there is. We, as we said before, prevention and education is the best medicine, and we're always looking for new innovative ways to educate the public without, you know, having to call them in front of a seminar or a PowerPoint. So we started something a few years ago. We call it CANN, C-A-N-N. It's our Consumer Alert News Network. And what we do is we partnered with a media company, Litton, and they actually they film little spots that go on local news stations around the country. And sometimes it's a victim being interviewed about a crime or a scheme. Sometimes it's a postal inspector talking about a crime or a scheme. And they slip these into local newscasts, which we feel is a good viewership around the country. And you're being educated without really knowing you're being educated. So it's not chest thumping, but it's just letting folks know, hey, don't let this happen to you by sharing the crime or the scheme. And that's evolved into our latest project over the last 2 years to a television show on Saturday mornings called The Inspectors. Now, we're very proud and excited about that. It's very different from anything that, I mean, obviously there's law enforcement shows on TV at night, Criminal Minds, NCIS, but this is very different because it's on Saturday mornings, which is educational informational programming, but we see it as an opportunity to educate people that there is a postal inspection service, show them, it's a half-hour show, so you kind of go through, you know, the crime, the investigation, and the solution afterwards, and it's all done in an educational format. It's very different. It's a 30-minute procedural drama that's on Saturday mornings. It's unlike anything that is on Saturday mornings, and over 1 million people watch it every week. So it's a really good way for us to get a message out there to an audience of not just young people, but their caregivers and their parents, and which is really the audience we're trying to get to.
Guy Cottrell is Chief Postal Inspector at the U.S. Postal Service. Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click share with friends.